we receive little or no training in equally useful form of reasoning known as model reasoning, M-O-D-A-L, model reasoning. There's another term which you need to understand. It uses logic to inquire into what could possibly be true. It's about opinions about people, opinion about some phenomenon. Somebody comes and tells you something. One person tells you, 10 people tell you, 100 people tell you, 2000 people tell you, the whole world tells you that this is true. If I go back to the sun rising in the east, does sun really rise in the east? No. It is what collectively all human beings see from planet Earth. And we feel the sun is rising from the east. But astronomers know that sun doesn't rise. The Earth is rotating. And because the Earth rotates, we get a feeling early morning that the sun is rising, and late in the evening we feel it is setting. And then if you take it further and further into discussions, you can go to other levels and realize there's nothing rising, nothing setting. But then those are not the things which most of us are familiar with on an experience. Day to day, I do not feel the Earth moving. I'm just standing here and talking to you. Right? But if I go and tell people the sun is not rising, sun is not setting, they may kill me. So who told you that? Except for a few group of people who know what is the actual celestial phenomenon. Right? So integrative thinkers reason about what might be about models that don't yet exist to generate a creative resolution. So they use this model reasoning for that. In the model reasoning, it makes use of deductive and inductive logic. But it also requires a third form of logic, namely abductive logic. Abducting means what? Kidnapping. A term that was created by Charles Sanders Peirce. He said, we must do what is called as abductive logic. Think so differently. It is not guided by a principle which says, look for reasoning, look for evidence, deductive logic. There's a statement and it says look for evidence, and the inductive logic says that look at all the evidence and then create a statement. It says come out of this trap, inverted commas trap, come out of it and do something different, abduct the whole thought process, take it away from the conventional way of thinking, do something different. Now that requires a certain amount of training, friends. That requires some amount of training. Every day after day I'm into deductive, inductive to take care of my problem solving and decision making. But one fine morning, if I have to come into this, it's something which I can't do because of my factory setting. So to do that, I have to follow certain things. So let's understand what they are. Abductive logic explains what he called inventive construction of theories. Inventive one, circle it. That integrative thinkers use to find models yet to come, stated Peirce. Inventive means something which is not there, which you're fabricating, which you're creating. If you see science fiction films, for example, you must have seen Star Wars or any of the science fiction films. The imagination is run wild and they create a story in such a way that after some time the imagination becomes a reality with you. On the horizon, we find one sun rising. Only one single sun rises. That's a phenomenon which all humans know. So in a science fiction film, the inventive part of the person's brain will say that there'll be two suns rising. One sun rises and after some time another sun rises. Maybe a third. Take a film like Harry Potter. The Harry Potter, if you take the entire movie or the book, it's got so much amount of inventiveness. The author came out of these two logics. She used the logic, deductive and inductive, and she came out with a reasoning which was different. And that's why we saw all the magic things and all. While we enjoy seeing this, we realize that this is possible, that is possible. Don't we do that? I've done a review on this particular movie, a sort of a review, like a video review, wherein I've spoken about how this type of thinking is a part of many, many movie making, inventive thinking, wherein they don't hijack you so much away that you feel completely deoriented. I take a lot of movie learning sessions and I do a lot of study on movie with respect to reasoning and thinking. So there, A few movies which had come very recently, some science fiction films, you know, there we were discussing about how when the viewer is watching the movie, he must feel a level of credibility that yes, it's possible. if a producer or a director of the movie is taking you so much away from credibility and you get lost, then the movie doesn't have any charm in you. Because that's the way human beings think. Anything that is a part of deductive, anything that is a part of inductive is commonplace. It's known to everybody. Everybody can do it. But anything inventive, which gives you a possibility that it is possible this way, that is exciting. And that is a type of thinking which integrative thinkers have. They don't take you totally out of the orbit into a state of deorientation. They keep you oriented and they take you beyond the deductive and beyond the inductive so that you are there. Right? Inductive can't because it draws inferences from repeated observations or experiences. Deductive can't because it needs a pre-existing theory or a model on which to base its reasoning. But invention, Pierce saw, required a logic for making leaps within your mind. The title of this chapter, inventive, makes you leap out of your mind. When you leap out of the mind, it's like a kite flying. The kite is flying out in the sky, but down below somebody is holding the, what we call it in Hindi as firki, where the thread is, you know, is there on the spindle. Right? Now that part of it is important. You don't deorient yourself, you're very much there. In essence, abductive logic seeks the best explanation. That is, it attempts to create the best model in response to a novel or an interesting data that doesn't fit into an extant model, existing model. Take the various the amenities or the town planning that is happening in many modern cities today. The metro, the monorail. Now all these things were possible because somebody thought differently. A city like Mumbai, for example, it has not been fully exploited. We have a lot of, we are an island. There's a water body all around us. Now the water body can be exploited in the best possible manner by going into a type of a thinking which is abductive. We have a road, traffic congestions in the roads. The monorails and metros are also absorbing a lot of traffic congestions, of course, as of now. But could we think of something different? Exploit the entire water body around the island and do something about it. Even in monsoons when it's a stormy waters, a place like Venice in Europe, they have entire waterways. There are streets, water streets. So the entire town is in water. And how they manage it? They have it as a compulsion. But here, can we look at something inventive? Is a question. Right? That's why the process of using abductive logic can be termed as generative reasoning. That's why these two are almost synonymous. It asks what might be rather than what is or what is bound to be. Okay? Business is a fertile ground for abductive logic. Many, many places in the business, expansion, takeover, mergers, acquisitions, getting in for a new technology, handling obsolescence, golden handshake. So many examples you can take where organizations can make abductive reasoning as a part of making things happen. Now, when you get into abductive reasoning or generative reasoning, what really happens is you go beyond the ordinary and you come out with solutions which are integrative for both the employees and the management, the old technology and the new technology. The old type of financial system with the new financial system. There are many, many infinite applications wherein people have not really thought in that direction. If only they think in the direction, a lot of things will happen. You know, we are in a tearing hurry. We are in a tearing hurry to keep on doing our compounded annual growth rate, CAGR. Keep on increasing profits. Keep on staying competitive. Yes, we need to stay competitive. We need to have profits. But during this process, we get into factory setting thinking. And then what happens is we get stuck. Everything keeps running perfectly well, but can we have a group of people, a body of people within the management who act like think tanks, whose main skills and abilities are integrative thinking, who can actually brainstorm and feed the top management, the decision makers, what needs to be done differently, even when the going is good, not when the going is bad. a top cell phone company is no more top on the list today because somewhere somebody has missed out on the generative reasoning. If only they had thought about generative reasoning, things would have been different, right? So in business, many times decisions have to be made on only a handful of data points. Do we get all the information on the table before we take a decision? We have this very glamorous MIS, Management Information Systems, that is supposed to come to my table for taking decisions. Do I get all the information? And even if I think I've got all the information, are they authentic enough? Are there means of verifying them? In most cases, no. I have some data points, I've got some dots, and I, as an integrative thinker, will learn to connect the dots. How will I connect the dots? Generative reasoning. Certain critical aspects of the organization I know. There are certain other things where unnecessarily there's being a weightage given. I need to have the wisdom to know that there's no need to give too much weightage to that. Like in one engineering company outside Mumbai, I noticed that there was too much of weightage given on the labor issue. Labor was a major issue because at that point, at that geographical location, there was a scarcity of good quality labor. Now, the organization spent a lot of time and money, and they've diverted their sims away from the main issue of the organization into that. They spent a lot of money and time in appointing some labor people, labor consultants, etc. So many things happened. They are all for the right purpose. But what really happened was they got into the trap of simplification and specialization. They got into the trap of focusing only on that, and majority of the energy required in the main this one, the mainstream was lost. And what really happened was they became more like labor people rather than production people. Now, this is something that happens in some companies. A major issue, somebody up there takes it as his pet project. Now, that person who takes it as a pet project has to be understand should understand that there is an integration required. See, many times the people who rise to a top at the topmost level come from a certain stream. Either they come from a production background or a marketing background or a finance background. They tend to think in that fashion even when they hold the top position of a CEO or an MD. You know, for the right or the wrong reasons, not more, not out of any bad intentions, they tend to take decisions which backfire. If only they pause and they get into these things which we are discussing and get into integrative thinking, things would be different. Because nobody gets all the information on the table. And when I do not get all the information on the table and I need to act upon it now, then what I do is I resort to the popular either-or approach. In the same scenario, I don't have all the information on my table and I need to act upon it now. If I'm a creative or a generative thinker, I look for alternatives like what Lee Chin and Isadore Sharp and all those gentlemen did, A.J. Lafley and all. Now, can I become another A.J. Lafley? Can I become another Isadore Sharp? Or for that matter, Bleacher? Now, these are not, they are ordinary people, but they did extraordinary thinking and action. They took the guts to come out and abduct their logic. They didn't get stuck up to the inductive or the deductive logic. Okay? Business has poor record of making marketable discoveries. It lacks an established model for innovation. A lot can be spoken about this. The point is, at the end of the day, take a marketing model. You know, we talk about consumer buyer behavior. We go and do research in the marketplace. So and so product will sell because this is a target audience. This type of plasma TV or this type of, you know, cell phones or these type of shampoos. How many of them come out with real research which is based on reality and actually click? They have a method of researching which is not wrong. Is there something else they need to infuse into that? Yes, abductive logic. There are excellent market research companies, globally very, very powerful, globally very, very effective. Even they confess at times that they need something more than the data that they're getting. The so-called qualitative data, for example, is not very easy to get. So very rarely you come across marketable discoveries which can be marketed. Okay, and there is a need for the model for innovation has to be established. Very rarely you come across this because not many do it. Some organizations in the Far East, they have it. Some of the organizations in Europe, they have it. I'm not mentioning the names. And a few organizations in India also have it, and some in the US. But they can be just counted by the fingers, very few. If you trace back and look at these companies' progress and the way the MDs and the CEOs have been operating, they have infused it as a part of their culture. If you infuse it as a part of a culture where everybody thinks like that, everybody is made to think integrative, things happen very well. If you recall Four Seasons, they do not have a customer service department. Everybody is a customer service person. Amazing thing to happen. Now, if an organization starts thinking in those terms, then things become different. But you know what organizations do? They try to adopt these practices, but with a different paradigm. The paradigm is that I want to cut cost. If cost cutting, through that you try to do no customer service department, that is not integrative thinking. That is something different. So what is the paradigm from where you operate is important. And these examples we have taken are powerful paradigms of people who actually wanted things to happen for the common good of mankind, not for only my profits. There are organizations which seem to be adopting inverted commas, these type of thinking. But they do it for the selfish purpose of my profits. I should be above the rest. And very nicely, it is being implemented, it is being done in such a way and gives you an illusion as if it is integrated thinking. It is not. One has to pause and ask, is this coming from a basic goodness for a growth and the larger interests of people who are a part of us? If you take all these examples which we have gone through from chapter 1, practically all of them are coming with those intentions and they are doing it. An initiative taken in the organization has to have a group good behind it. Profits are important, they are not unimportant, they are important. But when this integrated thinking becomes a strategy for profits, then the whole charm is lost. It can't become a strategy. It has to be the way we are. Right? In the absence of such a model, it can't use deduction to determine the soundness of a given course. Model reasoning and abductive logic are taught in the West, but very rarely. Some design schools, you know, we have business design in our own institute in V School. So this design school, we teach students to investigate users' needs that have gone unrecognized and incorporate them in their design. It's what is called as a market pull approach, not a production push approach. We go and see what people want. And we go and see what, okay, this person wants this. There are unstated needs of people. Now, unstated, they don't state it, but the way the person is consuming, go and observe people. From the way the people are consuming, from the way the people are acting with the goods and the services, you know, one needs to make our own inferences, observing, and then come out with certain interpretations. Right? So, but nearly in all business schools, students learning rational, quantitative and methodical disciplines have hardly any educational exposure to generative reasoning at all. Just learning subjects and not integrating them with the reality of the world doesn't hold much of water, right? Integrative thinkers, on the other hand, implicitly accept that generative reasoning is both conceptually legitimate in terms of a thinking process. It is perfectly normal and going in the proper direction, and practically speaking, the only tool suited to the job of fashioning new creative solutions. Integrative thinkers put their resolution through multiple prototypes and iterations. What is a resolution? It's the final outcome of the four steps. So what they do is they put them into different types of models. I try one way, I try another way, I try a third way, and I get different types of, you know, information at the first level, second level, third level, and the fourth level. Different saliences. I want to launch a car. So I make speed as a salience. So from the speed as a salience, causality will be different. Architecture will be different. Resolution will be different. Then I say looks. I'm just giving an example. And then what you do is you take some attributes and work out different salience of the same product. And then you start resolving it upwards. And when you do that, you'll come across multiple ways of looking at it. And this goes back down. It cascades down to get a learning how the integration has to happen. First is you go up. If you remember the example of Sally and Bill, which was given in one of the chapters, you start thinking in one direction upwards and then again come back and ask questions. So you do that, you get this. So they use generative thinking, whose raw material, one needs to remember, is yet to exist, to work backwards from resolution to architecture to causality to salience. I need to imagine what a holiday person who's coming to a resort expects. Now there are stereotypical reports which tells you he expects this. Yes, he does expect. He expects something more than that. I travel to a city wherein traveling from the airport to that city, to the location where I need to go, is very painful. It's too very long. It's anybody's guess. It could be taking something like 1.5 to 2 hours for a distance which would otherwise take only 45 minutes. Right? Now, the concerned location where I go, the hotel where I stay, they realize this importance of this, of the person traveling from far and what he must be going through from coming from the airport till the hotel location. Now they think about it, they have thought about it, done it many times in the past perhaps. So when the person lands up, the first thing they do is they first and foremost they make you comfortable and offer you a drink. And they say everything else can wait. You can just sit down, relax. And then they ask you about how was the journey and all, you know, and they accept, you know, we know that the distance is too long and it's quite a long journey and all those things, traffic jams and all. And they try to cushion your frayed nerves. And then what happens? Then you get into the, you know, you get your room and you go into the room and all that. So the transition from there to here is so smooth. And they're trained to also attend to people who get very upset when they land up because of the traffic. It's human nature. Now that sort of what did they do? They went to the resolution and came back to the architecture. They created an architecture using the saliences, the causalities that are required from where it is emerging. And when they do that, it's amazing thing to happen. So they work backwards, in other words. Design your product backwards. I'm holding this pointer in the hand. Is it designed so that it's comfortable in my hand, in somebody else's hand? Now, this is how one has to work backwards. It's more of a, what I said is market pull. The market pulls me to produce a product with the market needs. And many of the needs of the market is unstated. It's unstated. So knowing the unstated needs is also an important skill which this type of reasoning teaches us. Okay? Large organizations may not recognize generative reasoning as a legitimate mode of inquiry, but they depend on it for lasting competitive advantage. Lasting competitive advantage, lasting, these three words are important. One of the things that generative reasoning does, it doesn't give you quick fix solutions. It's not creativity for the heck of it. It is something carefully thought out. It's coming as a spark, and then the spark actually multiplies into a huge light which sustains for the whole organization. Right? Like others, Bletcher saw that South African blacks were poor, uneducated and dispirited. Unlike others, at the same time, he also saw that young Africans could flourish in the right conditions. Very positive thinking. Given a helping hand, they escaped their seemingly hopeless conditions and then extended hand back to help their communities and make a positive difference to South Africa. He knew people in the low-income countries like India and China made rapid social and economic progress, complement to us. African entrepreneurs had created wealth and opportunities where none were there before. And as befits an integrative thinker, Bletcher used abductive reasoning to discover a pattern among these disparate data points. Disparate means they didn't make any connections. Here were two countries, India and China, poor countries. In spite of that, we had made rapid social and economic progress. Very surprising to the Western thinker. At the same time, African entrepreneurs had created wealth. Very poor country. How these, some of them did make it happen even in a poor country? This is still a sort of, you know, question mark for many Western thinkers. Right? So these data points were there with him, and much of Bletcher's reasoning about SIDA can be best described as generative. He drew from the success of some of these countries, perhaps. He drew from what is defining the flow of thinking. Any exception to a rule helps you to get into generative thinking. Any exception to the rule helps you to get into generative thinking. Right? So, taking it further, he didn't actually have sufficient data either to make that vision his purpose in life or to see Siddha as a means of achieving it. He didn't have enough of data. You know, people are obsessed. When you go to your boss in your company where you're working and you come out with a very bright proposition, a proposal, he would ask you for a lot of evidences, data. This is a common thing in an ordinary organization. And a youngster comes and, you know, he shoots him down saying that, look, you don't have the data, get lost, get the data, then you talk about the project. A bright project gets drowned, it gets completely devastated when the person who is coming out with the enthusiasm of doing it does not have sufficient data. I'm not saying data is not important, but at all times there'll always be some data which is insufficient in the eyes of someone else. In the eyes of someone else, all data which I collect will be insufficient. I may have a highly knowledgeable person above me or more experience, but he may see it from his factory setting that this data is required. It may not be required for me. Or this data may come to me at the right time when I want it. Now, those are aspects on which we have to let go people. We have to let go people. Right? He couldn't prove it in advance. We can't prove it in advance or deduce or induce it from the existing theories or data. It required him to make leaps in his mind to reason about what might be. Leap in the mind.